Now, your host, Michael Cohen, with a Capital City Recap on More Compelling Talk Radio, 1320 WILS.
Rolling our way through a Wednesday night in Lansing, I'm Michael Cohen with producer James Platy. Well, Charles Fishman, an award-winning journalist and the author of The Big Thirst, the highly acclaimed book about our relationship with water, is going to be in East Lansing tomorrow speaking at Michigan State University. His talk titled The Coming Water Revolution. It kicks off at 3:30 p.m. at the MSU Kellogg Center, but he first joins us here to give us a preview. Charles, thanks for joining us this evening.
Oh, thanks very much for having me. Happy to be in Lansing and East Lansing.
So coming to the Great Lakes State to talk about a water shortage, isn't that like going to the North Pole to talk to Eskimos about the coming snow shortage?
Well, I guess I'm not, I don't think of myself as someone who comes to talk about just scarcity. I come to talk about understanding how to use water more smartly. And right here in Michigan, there's actually a great, you know, at Michigan State, there's a great center of research and excellence in terms of trying to understand what we're doing to our water, how to better use it, how to use it more smartly. Mm-hmm. You're never sorry you used a little less water, even if you live in the Great Lakes.
Well, look, we've heard a lot about third world countries struggling to get supplies of good drinking water for their populations. But how exactly would this water revolution affect us here in the U.S., and especially us here in Michigan with our vast freshwater lakes?
Right. I think in a place like Michigan, there are a couple things to talk about. You know, Michigan is the place where micropollutants were first discovered about 15 years ago. That's the tiny, tiny, tiny trace elements of pharmaceuticals, hair conditioner, fire retardant from kids' pajamas that are kind of seeping into our water supply. And those were actually first discovered in an analysis of Lake Michigan water. So there's lots to still be understood about water, whether you have huge quantities or you have very little.
Right, but if you have the quantities, and even if they are polluted, can't you always just clean the water and recycle it?
Absolutely. And in fact, that's what nature does, and that's what we have to do as well. The micropollutants occur in such tiny quantities that the current system for cleaning water, either before we drink it or after we use it and release it back into the environment, doesn't take them out. Now, we certainly have the ability to do it. We just don't, we aren't using it.
So
you want to be careful that you don't let 50 years go by during which you let this stuff accumulate, even in lakes the size of Lake Superior and Lake Michigan.
I want to ask you, though, there are these visions that we're going to have world wars over not oil but water at some point. Do you see that as a very real potential?
No. I'm a little calmer about that prospect than the general publicity is. You know, if you're going to fight a war over something, if you win the war, you have to be able to take what you're fighting over back to yourself and use it. So if it's true that we fight wars in the Middle East over and over again to secure oil supplies, well, there's a whole system for moving oil. But there is, in fact, no system for moving water around even most regions if the pipes and the canals aren't already built. Yes, we move lots of water around the West, but that system's very rigid. If Atlanta gets into trouble, Orlando, Florida, and Charlotte, North Carolina can't help Atlanta by sending them water.
Let me ask you this. You call it a water revolution. Are we facing a point very soon, do you think, that we're going to have to rethink nationwide how we use water and maybe really have a real rationing of the use of water?
I don't think we're going to have rationing, but I think the water revolution will involve things like not watering your lawn and not flushing your toilet with purified tap water. That's completely absurd and also totally unnecessary. It'll involve reusing water, especially in big uses, in factories and businesses, rather than simply using it once through and letting it go, cleaning it right there where it's being used. Car factories are a great example, and either downcycling it or using it for some other purpose that it's more than clean enough still to be used for. And so in that way, the revolution won't change whether we have enough water, you know, to drink or make coffee or boil pasta or wash our cars or water our azaleas. But I hope we'll start using different kinds of water for different purposes, and we'll
sounds like a water evolution, really. I'm talking to Charles Fishman. He is the author of the book, The Big Thirst. He will be at Michigan State University tomorrow speaking at the MSU Kellogg Center at 3:30 p.m. Well, Charles, we can call it water, but really nowadays people refer to it as Aquafina or Poland Springs. So tell me, what are your thoughts about the way we've now incorporated bottled water as our key way of drinking water in America? Is there anything particularly wrong with that?
Well, I actually began my journey into the world of water by studying and writing about bottled water. I went all the way to Fiji. I went to Poland Spring. I went to San Pellegrino, Italy. Look, bottled water is silly. I'm 51, so I grew up in an era where we used an antique device called a water fountain. But it's a great way of getting people to talk about water. Where does their water come from? 25% of the bottled water in this country, Aquafina and Dasani, are both just municipal water, city water, run through a filter and put in a bottle for you. They are repackaging your own city water and selling it back to you at 3,000 times the cost of tap water.
It does taste so good, Charles.
No, it only tastes good because it's cold. In blind taste tests, no one can ever pick bottled water from tap water. If you serve the waters at the same temperature in the same cup, not even the people who produce the bottled water can pick out their own product.
Okay, so, if that's the case, why is it such a booming market if that's really the case?
Oh, it's a booming market because what people are buying is convenience. They're not buying the water itself. They're buying the water at the moment that they're thirsty. So they go to a cold case in a convenience store like 7-Eleven, and there's water there, and they buy it, and it's convenient. Parents who are sending their kids to school would much rather pluck something out of the refrigerator and drop it in the lunchbox then have to fill a water bottle, remember to put it in the refrigerator, wash it.
Well, let me ask you this, though. With what you know about water, tap water, is it a good idea to maybe consider filtering it, maybe using one of these home filtration systems? Is that a good idea on its own?
Well, we use a Brita pitcher in our house because we don't love the taste of the water right out of the tap. And so if you have any concern, either about the taste or about safety, any one of those commercial filters takes most of what you would be worried about out. But Mike, if you go into a shopping mall in Lansing or Detroit and look around, pause and look around, Americans' health problems do not have to do with their tap water. We need a little more of the activity that causes us to be thirsty.
Right.
At some point, it might be the tap water becomes a concern, but at this moment, the big health concerns for America as a nation don't have to do with what is or isn't in our tap water.
Well, yeah, I think we're drinking more Diet Coke than water. Let me ask you about desalination technologies, the idea of, you know, removing salt from seawater and making that drinkable, making a vast amount of water now available to us. Do you see that as a real hope for future water use, especially for countries that don't have enough?
Oh, it's not just a hope. It's in practice. Australia went through a devastating decade-long drought that completely remade the entire economy of the country. Every major city in Australia, except for the northern city of Darwin, is building or has built a huge desal plant. So the technology works. It's very effective if you live near the coast. Now, it's not going to be great for Kansas City or Omaha. The problem is it's expensive, and it uses an enormous amount of energy, and energy isn't getting any cheaper. So
in a sense, that's not going to really be a sustainable model.
Well, it depends on where you live. I mean, right. Israel is shooting for getting 70 or 80% of its drinking water through desal. Saudi Arabia is almost there already. Australia is certainly going to be at 20 or 30%. But a much smarter and less expensive method of getting good, clean water is for cities to take the water they already have, their wastewater, and clean it and reuse it. It's all reuse water anyway. So.
Just a minute left. I do want to ask you a local question. When it comes to the Great Lakes we have here in around our state, there is concern that and there have been efforts to siphon that off to other areas in the country. There are companies that do come and take that water from us. Should we be worried in the long term that there's going to be more and more desire for our very precious fresh water here?
There may be more and more desire for it, but there's now a law in place, the Great Lakes Compact. It's a law in the U.S. and a treaty with Canada. No water from the Great Lakes, the lakes themselves, can leave the watershed and be used anywhere else. So you guys are safe. You don't have to worry. That law is a federal law backed by the federal government. No one's going to build a pipeline from Lake Superior or Lake Michigan to Las Vegas. It can't be done.
Well, that's good news. You know, let me throw one last question at you, which is what we see happening in America. Most Americans move down south. That's what's happening. They retire. We're going to see vast numbers of Americans retiring. They go down south. Of course, they'd love to play golf. These types of things take enormous amounts of water. Do you see, especially in the southern part of the country, a real change that's going to have to occur?
Well, two things. Absolutely. And those communities, across, especially the Southwest, but the Southeast has had drought recently as well, are beginning to dramatically rethink water use. But much more importantly, a place like Michigan has great water resources. And that gives you all an incredible economic advantage over places that are dry. And I hope that people in Michigan and people in Wisconsin and people in upstate New York learn to use water as a recruiting tool for companies and economic development. You've got almost unlimited, clean, safe water, and businesses need it. And so it's a great way of saying to companies, don't locate in Phoenix, locate in Lansing or Flint.
Charles Fishman, award-winning journalist, author of The Big Thirst. He will be at Michigan State University tomorrow at 3:30 at the MSU Kellogg Center. His speech titled The Coming Water Revolution. Go check it out. Charles, thanks for joining us this evening.
Thanks for having me, Mike.